Hello and welcome to Cyber Soundbites, the podcast that explores how best to protect yourself, your family and friends online. We'll also keep you updated on the latest cyber threats while taking a deeper dive into subjects such as social media use, the dark web and online gaming. I'm Ben Cook and this time I'm talking to Will, who works for the UK National Authority for Counter-Eavesdropping, or NACE, which is part of the Foreign Office and provides technical security advice to government. Will is an expert on the Internet of Things, like, for example, smart speakers and how hackers can exploit them for their own gain. Due to the nature of his work, we've disguised Will's voice. First of all, I asked him to explain what exactly NACE does.
Sure, so my name's Will and I work for the UK National Authority for Counter-Eavesdropping. We're part of the Foreign Office and we are based in Milton Keynes and we provide technical security advice to government.
Awesome. So before we continue, why do you do what you do?
Well, that's a very good question. I think when I was leaving school, I was either going to join the military or pursue a career in government service. And I just steered towards working for the Foreign Office, doing a modern apprenticeship. I kind of had quite a strong calling for service, so I thought with my interest in kind of IT and electronics, I thought that at the time this was kind of the most appropriate route, but I didn't realise that I'd ultimately be working for NACE, for the National Authority for Counter-Eavesdropping.
Well, here you are. Yeah. So, exciting stuff. So, Will, today I'd like to explore a bit about the organisation you work for. That is the UK National Authority for Counter-Eavesdropping, or NACE, the Internet of Things and how hackers can exploit them for their own gain, and about some of the threats out there, both past, present and future. So, firstly, what exactly does NACE do?
So NACE are one of three national technical authorities. We provide technical security advice and operational services, predominantly to HMG. We're broadly split into two. We have the NTA side, which is a bit like a consultancy, and then we have our operational teams that go out and do operational work, such as inspections or what people might colloquially refer to as bug sweeps. We also provide construction, rising building supervision, so construction supervision, to ensure that the integrity of government buildings remain secure, to ensure that kind of no nasties are installed. And we also provide kind of in-place monitoring systems and various other countermeasures to help us detect any anomalies. And then on the consultancy side, we're kind of broadly split into three areas. We've got our technical intelligence and analysis wing. They provide threat assessments based on the technical information we get. We have an academy that trains a lot of our technical staff that are forward deployed and posted in our embassies overseas. And we also have our engagement and outreach wing, which essentially promotes best practice within technical security and security awareness training to kind of non-technical staff in order to rise the tide on security awareness.
Right, so you use the terms nasties, bug sweep and anomalies.
Yeah.
Paint the picture for me. What sort of things are you looking for if you're doing a bug sweep of a building?
Sure. So I guess if you look at from our heritage, we started about 75 years ago, the kind of level of tech and sophistication of electronics was quite different from what we face today. So kind of a modern day threat could include anything from a £20 little box that you buy from Amazon or eBay deployed against a target. We usually refer to those as what's called quick plants. They are devices that can be deployed very quickly, all the way through to the other end of the spectrum, which is like the latest and greatest state threat level attacks that are incredibly expensive, highly classified, and are designed to last a very long time because of the secrecy and level of scientific tech that's involved to create those devices. So when we go out to sites, we have to cover the whole spectrum of threats that are out there to an environment.
And how are these things, how have they evolved over time? Presumably at the dawn of NACE, you know, you guys were combating very, very different threats. So how's that evolved over time between then and now?
Sure, yeah. So kind of some of our very early days kind of discoveries were really large microphones, very crude devices that are, you know, wired into rooms. Whereas today, with the advent of the internet and kind of, I guess, what you could call hyper-connectedness, we've essentially got some really sophisticated technology that sits in our hands, so like a mobile phone or a laptop. And when you think about it, the capability of those devices that we have today far outweigh the level of sophistication from a device maybe even 20 or 30 years ago. So what that means is we are essentially walking around with a potential eavesdropping device either in our pocket or sitting on our lap. And because it's connected to a global network that's public, the ability for an actor to do nasty stuff to us is easier because the attack surface is larger. No longer do I have to break into a building to install a microphone to listen to a conversation. When I've got a mobile phone that's sitting right here next to me, potentially exploitable and potentially hackable from anywhere in the world.
I mean, it's scary.
It can be terrifying.
it's terrifying. Everything, you know, and you mentioned there already, we've got Alexa, we've got other sort of smart speakers. I don't know whether that's the right term. We've got our phones. Yeah. Quite literally everything that is electronic that we carry on us seems like it can be infiltrated by someone with the desire to do so. Do you think I'm right in saying that?
Yeah, I think a healthy level of paranoia is the order of the day. I think what we say in NACE is that we try to inform people of the risks so they can make more educated choices themselves. We're saying that technical espionage does take place. It doesn't necessarily mean it is taking place to you all the time. But the potential is definitely there and the threat has evolved and is evolving. I guess when you think about how working practices have changed over the last 3 or 4 years, from a NACE perspective, the assets, so you know, the valuable information to actors, typically would have been held within one or two buildings, and that made our job much easier because if we just secured that building and secured the environments in that building, that was, you know, that was fine and straightforward. Zoom up to date in 2023, you know, we're working from home. We have the assets sitting on our lap, and that could be in a home office, or it could be in a hotel, or it could be in a coffee shop. So suddenly the asset is spread thinly but very widely, and that makes the job of securing it for people like me much harder.
So I think here's probably quite a good time to just differentiate between those two types of hacks, I'd say. So why is it you think a hacker would opt to hack into the environment that people saying talking about sensitive subjects might find themselves in comparison to a specific device carried by one of those people?
Sure. So I guess when you think about what technical security is, or kind of our definition, and there is no kind of broadly agreed definition throughout the community, but kind of our broadly kind of agreed definition within NACE is that it's the protection of environments and what we call data at rest. So what does that mean to someone that's not in our world? That basically means securing of rooms where speech takes place, or securing of documents or in a room, or the computer that sits on a desk. You know, why would that be of interest to someone rather than just hacking into a mainframe server, for example? Well, if you think about the content that's produced on a computer, the kind of telegrams or whatever is produced, you know, by government, the kind of the official communications by government are all really grammatically correct. They're all crafted. It's a very curated view into the opinions of a particular department or section. What's really interesting to a state threat actor is the conversations that create those documents. What I guess, kind of coming back to basics, what is intelligence? Intelligence gives decision advantage, and by having a true unvarnished view of your adversary's opinion, that gives you real insight to what they're thinking, and that's why an eavesdropping device might be used in order to pick up those conversations rather than trying to steal an email. Our mantra is, why have part of the puzzle when you can have all the conversations that makes up the puzzle in the first place?
Yeah. Okay. There's logic there. Then
yeah.
I see. So paint me a bit of a picture. We've spoken a bit about the sorts of devices that you guys are looking for during bug sweeps. You've just mentioned there about, you know, touching on the sorts of environment that these hackers are going to look to exploit. But what would an attack of this kind actually look like, and how do hackers infiltrate our personal devices in the first place?
Sure. Well, I think that comes back to kind of what the attack surface looks like. So an attack surface, if you put your kind of your attacker hat on, you're trying to find out where you might be able to gather your information that you've been asked to go and collect. And I guess what does that look like, and how might I do it? Well, I've got a number of options. So I could either recruit someone who works on the inside and you know, pay them a lot of money and ask them to steal information for me. I could either break in and kind of snoop around myself. I guess you could think of like Mission Impossible style with you know, balaclavas in the middle of the
night.
That's
what I've got in my mind.
Yeah, exactly. It's slightly different from that, I'm led to believe, but you know, kind of breaking into somewhere. And then also there's the other option of essentially kind of hacking into computer networks or getting very close to those premises. If I can't do any of the kind of previous mentioned kind of attack vectors, we call them, if I can't recruit an insider or I can't hack in or I can't break in, you know, I'm not going to go, oh, that's it, I can't do anything, my day's over. You know, they'd be out of a job. So there are other methods in which you can collect information. And what we call close access. So that's essentially getting very close to your target location without actually stepping over that line, so to speak, of breaking in and seeing what you can listen to. That might be overhearing, or that might be listening to radio waves or what have you that carries our data.
How are the companies manufacturing devices like the ones that we've spoken about, or at least hinted at, protecting their consumers? I guess I ask this because, you know, it's a bit of a running joke that if you go into someone's kitchen, they've got Alexa sat there in the corner, there's always the joke that Alexa's always listening. So I guess I'm asking you, Will, is Alexa always listening?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really good question, because I think, you know, as humans, we probably try to think of the best and think that everything is in a positive light. But if you think about actually how those systems kind of are engineered, for you to say, hey Alexa, or hey, or okay Google, or hey Siri, or whatever brand you've got, the device has to be listening to you, the microphone has to be active in order for the device to know when you say that trigger phrase. I'm sure if you look in the T's and C's of use, that it will tell you that it is listening to you all the time. And then you asked a really good question about how companies are kind of protecting us. Well, you know, companies, obviously, their key objective is kind of usability and uptime and usage. So there's a really good example in 2022 last year, where it was all over the news that there was a security flaw in Apple devices, and that they were pushing out a huge update to all their devices as Apple discovered you know, it was being actively exploited by hackers to kind of like fully control their devices. So companies are on it, you know, they do push out updates to ensure that their devices are as secure as they can be. But of course, there's always going to be kind of what are called zero days, so attacks that are exploitable that no one yet knows of.
Right, okay. So I'd like now to talk about some casing examples to help us understand more about the kind of threats out there and what's being done to stop them. So some of the most talked about hacks of this kind are hacks carried out using Pegasus software, described by some as perhaps the most powerful piece of spyware ever developed, which is quite terrifying. But talk to me a bit about Pegasus hacks and why they are so concerning.
Sure, yeah. So Pegasus is developed by a company called NSO Group. And what I'll probably do is talk more broadly about that kind of suite of software. So we refer to them as remote access Trojans or RATs. And what that piece of software can do is it essentially provides full control of any device that it ends up on. What does that mean? So that basically means that if you are targeted either by a state threat actor or a criminal gang, or you click on a link that you shouldn't do, there's potential that a remote access Trojan could be downloaded without your knowledge to your device, either your tablet, your laptop, your phone, or any kind of smart device, really. What does that actually do? Well, that provides the attacker full control of your device. So that means they can browse your user contacts, they can browse your SMS, they can browse your the files and the photos on your phone, and sadly, yes, they can even read all your WhatsApp messages or Signal messages. And that's quite an interesting statement, because a lot of these applications pride themselves on having what's called end-to-end encryption. And that's very true. So the messages are encrypted when they leave your phone and go over the mobile phone networks or Wi-Fi or what have you. But in order for you to be able to read the message needs to be unencrypted, and it needs to be in clear text. And if I have a remote access Trojan, then I can read that message. And it's a bit like remote view into whatever's going on that device. So if you've ever called up a help desk, an IT help desk, and they've sent you a link and you click accept and you can see the mouse moving around on the screen, that's the kind of view that an attacker can see on your device. You might not see files moving around, you might not see a mouse moving around, but they can certainly view what's going on.
And who are these people targeting?
So the manufacturers are targeting governments. They are, NSA Group, I think, pride themselves on only providing software to approved governments. But this, you know, this software is developed in order to essentially eavesdrop on people. Perhaps I should have mentioned just before, when I was to kind of giving you the rundown of the specification of a remote access Trojan, it can, you know, they can also turn on the microphone and the cameras on your phone, if or device, whichever device it's on, and kind of actively listen to what's going on, or kind of see what your camera sees.
Right. So another example was the hack on the chemical weapons watchdog organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons. That's a mouthful.
Yeah, it is a mouthful.
What happened here, and who was to blame?
So this is a great example of a what we call a close access attack. So when you can't break in, can't recruit that insider, or you can't hack the computer networks. What these guys did was they landed with no equipment into the country, so it wouldn't look suspicious. They went to the equivalent of a Maplin, bought a load of IT equipment, they bought a laptop, they bought an antenna, they bought a device called a Wi-Fi Pineapple, which is a little bit of electronics that essentially allows you to program up and replicate another Wi-Fi access point. They hired a car, they drove around the perimeter of the building and compound that they couldn't get into, and they listened to the Wi-Fi networks using this equipment to see where the strongest signal was. And then what they did was they reversed the car, parked it up and walked away. And what that attack did was essentially, it's called, the technical term is, it's called a man-in-the-middle attack. So what it intended to do was it intended to replicate the OPCW's Wi-Fi and trick one of the computers or a device to connect to their equipment rather than the genuine network, and essentially steal user credentials. So in kind of in hacking terms, it's all about user credentials, you know, usernames and passwords. And what the intention was, those details would then be sent to another area, and essentially use those remotely to snoop around and find out what was going on in that computer network.
Attacks like these are occurring across the world all the time. Sure. But I'm keen to get your take on what it is that we're expecting to see in the future in the way of these attacks, and what advice that you can offer to those of us using smart devices, electric cars, or anything that could be compromised to ascertain the information that we've already spoken about.
Sure, yeah. So I think as we see the world evolve, you know, there are a lot of scary subjects out there, such as AI and quantum and all sorts of, you know, massive developments. I think what we're going to see, kind of if we look over the horizon, we're going to see devices becoming so much more connected. To the internet and connected to each other. So things that we perhaps traditionally wouldn't have thought needed an internet connection will have an internet connection. An internet connected fridge has been around for a while, but lots of other devices are going to be connected to the internet. And we can see that through things like Nest, so like remote thermostats. Your fridge is connected to the internet, so it knows when to order your items. I've no doubt that someone's going to invent the internet-connected washing machine or dishwasher, but it kind of goes a bit further than that, where things like our cars are going to be connected to the internet. And, that's quite an interesting subject, because not just because, we're potentially going to be driving more electric cars in the future, but actually all those cars are run by software. If you take, for example, Tesla, all the updates for their cars are thrown over the air, so they're updated through the internet. But it kind of gets even better than that, where there are different types of technology that are going to allow cars to talk to each other. It's called V2V, which is the protocol, and that allows cars to update each other when they're next to each other or talk to each other in order for driverless cars. And then there's another technology called V2X, which essentially stands for Vehicles to Everything. And that is what we're going to see, the advent of smart cities. And I know that's a huge subject that I'm not going to dive into. From a security perspective, it's interesting because the more and more things are connected together, the more aggregation of data we have. And we're going to see a lot more data collected, metadata, so data about data, that's going to be connected and could potentially be exploitable.
Well, you've just dropped smart cities there. I feel like we could an entire other podcast on that topic. Maybe next time.
Maybe next time.
Okay. Maybe next time. Okay, well, thank you so much for joining me today. We've spoken about the kind of work that you and your organisation do and, of course, some of the threats out there. Just some parting words of advice, perhaps, for those of us using smart devices. Mm. How can we continue to protect ourselves?
So I think what we can do is stay up to date with what's going on in the media. You know, the media are usually quite good at letting us know when there are big kind of security updates. I think kind of from a practical, what can I do? There are several things that we recommend with your devices. So essentially, if you think about it, coming back to what I said before about espionage does take place, but it might not be taking place all the time. Pretty much a lot of the software out there, the remote access Trojans that are lower in sophistication, that might get onto your device by you accidentally clicking on a Royal Mail link or winning £200. And, spoiler alert, you probably haven't won £200. If you click on those links and a remote access Trojan might be on your phone, the best advice is to restart your phone, because most of them only live in what's called temporary memory. And when you turn your device off and turn it on again, it clears that down. If you find that your phone or device is still running quite sluggish, we then recommend to actually reset your device or kind of reinstall your device. So if you are an iPhone user, go and install your latest iCloud backup. And what that does is it rolls back the operating system to the previous version that you had or the previous update you had. And then other advice that we provide is ensure that your devices are patched and up to date. As soon as your phone says update me, just go ahead and do it, because that will be for a reason. And then just be mindful of where you connect to networks, computer networks. I think the whole reason that the OPCW attack was successful is because it exploited something built into the Wi-Fi protocol, which is connecting to the strongest access point. And it's not beyond the realms of reality that someone could do this sitting in a Costa or a Starbucks or whatever, public Wi-Fi is available. So just be mindful of where you connect your devices to. Connect to a trusted Wi-Fi connection. And they're kind of like the top tips that we recommend to people.
Brilliant. Good words of advice there. So let's finish there. Will, thank you so much for your time. Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
That was Will from NACE, the UK National Authority for Counter-Eavesdropping. Look out for more episodes in this series. You can find them on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can find out more by emailing the team at cyberconfident@mod.gov.uk.